97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, we're back from the Labor Day holiday. Fred's in the room with me. Ethan's getting ready for Sue's news because Sue is off. She'll be back on Thursday afternoon. Doesn't it seem like last Friday was like 3 weeks ago or something like that?
It sure does. It was a long weekend.
There was a lot that went on over the weekend. You know what we did on Sunday afternoon just because I had to get my daughter out of the house? I needed to get myself out of the house too. We went and saw Coyote versus Acme at Ronnie's. It was fantastic, Fred. You would love it. It was such a good movie. Now, Ethan, like, he wouldn't get it. Like, he wouldn't get the old references.
Right.
You know, because you got Foghorn Leghorn in there and, you know, Porky and Bugs and every Tweety Bird. Everyone's in there. And Will Forte, you know, it's kind of like one of those movies like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where you have a blending of the, you know, real and then animation. And it was very effective. I liked it. It was a very funny movie. So it was good. I recommend that to folks. And it's not in a lot of theaters right now. It opened a couple weeks ago.
I haven't heard much about it.
Paul talked about it 2 weeks ago. It didn't open this past weekend. I think it opened 2 weeks ago. But, you know, these movies, they don't last very long in the theaters. So you'll be able to see it on your streaming platform soon enough. You did something entertainment-wise, right?
On Saturday night, I went to a comedy show at the Improv Club, which is on Shodo right off of Vandeventer. And, you know, I've been to improv acts before, like Second City and, you know, in Chicago. And there's another really good one in L.A. that I went to. And I always just sit there and pray they don't invite you up.
Right. That's what you don't want to have happen.
Right.
Exactly.
But,
you don't want to become part of the show.
What was
right?
unique about this show, and the comedy group was called 145, the 145 Improv Group. And what they did was they did an improv musical on the scene. I mean, at the time, because it's improv.
Okay.
So they asked for suggestions from the audience, and somebody yelled up laboratory, and somebody else said bad laboratory. So they did 45 minutes. They came up with a musical. There are five
called Bad Laboratory?
Called Bad Laboratory.
Really?
With songs. They had a piano player who played music, and they just faked songs. It was so funny. It was really good.
That's crazy.
It was a great time.
Well, you know,
they were a good group.
What's funny about that is that, you know, and I talk sometimes about these shows that I watch, you know, late at night. I just rewatched all of Seinfeld because that was my half hour, you know, before I go to bed show. And I started watching, and I think it's Netflix that put these up there, old episodes, Fred, and I never watched new episodes of this, and I'm not sure you did either, but I'll quiz you on this. Did you ever watch Second City SCTV when, like, it was in its heyday with John
Candy?
No,
I didn't. I should.
Yeah, you know, because it was more of a Canadian thing. It was sketch comedy between 76 and 1984. It was an offshoot of Toronto Second City. This is where Eugene Levy got his start. Andrea Martin, Rick Moranis, Catherine O'Hara. I mean, a young Catherine O'Hara. Harold Ramis is in there. Martin Short. Dave Thomas. Remember Dave Thomas?
Oh, yeah.
Tony Rosato. I think I mentioned John Candy, right? But here's the thing I will tell you. It's like, it's really, really rough around the edges comedy. Like, it's not all funny. You can see that they're trying, and they're trying to cut their comedic teeth. It's not like watching SNL from the 70s where you get one of those classic bits and you're just laughing your ass off. This is a little bit more of an investment because you're seeing people that you know really, really well and that made, you know, a lot of money and became big stars, but it's really low-level sketch comedy, you know, and sometimes you hit it out of the park and sometimes you don't. But that's interesting that they could do that just based on a couple of words and boom, you know, do a 45-minute show.
It was crazy.
How did
funny.
You end up going?
A
how
group
did you find
of friends
out about
went.
It?
Just Marie had some friends and we all went.
When we wrapped last week, Fred, we were talking about the Lindsay Clancy case. Now, I never asked you this question today, so I will ask you here on the air because we get into Friday. There's a mistrial. We covered this extensively last week. I don't like to follow news, you know, when I'm off during the weekend, especially the holiday weekend. So I start to kind of look at some stuff on Sunday, and I'm really shocked that there were no jury members that came out and said anything in the aftermath of this, right? That really surprised me.
Maybe not me so much, because I think there might be a lot of fear.
Well,
you know, in today's
justifiable,
age,
right?
It's dangerous.
Yeah, so that was one thing I expected today. I expected to kind of, you know, wake up and have, well, the interview that I'm going to play you here with Kevin Reddington was on Good Morning America, but it wasn't with one of the jurors, and that he's the attorney for Lindsey Clancy, and he goes on ABC and says something relatively stupid.
I'm horrified at what women have to deal with postpartum, dealing with postpartum depression, dealing with, God forbid, postpartum psychosis, and the horrific actions that occur as a result of that.
That's not the stupid part. Here it is.
Donald Trump, who felt compelled to speak out about this case, may very well, Mr. President, I would hope that you would consider this young lady, the type of person she is, what she's been through, and consider a pardon.
Okay, well, there's no path to that. Jonathan Turley pointing that out.
I have no idea. You're absolutely correct. He cannot pardon for state offenses. And I think the likelihood that a presidential pardon will be coming down for his client are about the same as my coaching the Chicago Bears this season. It's a strange thing for him to raise.
So that's the only thing that happened is Kevin Reddington went out there and did a couple interviews. It's so weird because that story dominated the headlines for so long. And now, you know, we'll have to see what happens. The next date I think they have in court is for a few weeks from now, right?
Right.
It's later,
like September 20th.
In September, yeah.
28th,
so I don't know if I'm going to talk about something here that I'm not sure if I've ever gone down the rabbit hole with you, Fred. I know that I've talked to Sue about this, and I've talked about it on the air just a little bit. I have I'm not a doctor, okay? And I don't play one on the radio, except now. I'm going to play one on the radio. You know, I've gone on these tangents over the last few years, in particular in the aftermath of COVID, against the experts, because the experts get a lot of things wrong. Now, we love our medical experts. I had eye surgery in 1992. My ophthalmologist is still here in St. Louis. This was in Columbia, but his name is Dr. Kevin Blinder. I always love that. But if I didn't have someone with that level of expertise operating and saving my retina all those years ago, well, I wouldn't be able to see out of one eye. So don't get me wrong when I'm saying the experts. I understand there's a lot of experts out there that are pretty buttoned up, a lot of you physicians, folks in the medical community. But the experts, when it comes to research, they get wrong a lot. And one thing that I have said, I think from an educated standpoint, now I'm vindicated, Fred, I'll get to that in a second, is that we've done a disservice to ourselves. You and I and Sue, if she was here, when we grew up in the 1970s, we weren't spraying sunscreen all over us. And we were not lathering ourselves in sunscreen, right? So now we do that, like almost to excess, right? So what I've said over the years is, being not educated and not a doctor, nor do I play one on the radio, is that I think we've actually done some harm to ourselves by not allowing the sun to shine on us as much as it should, because we're depriving ourselves of vitamin D, and vitamin D is very important. So I was basing that on research that I had seen. You know, I just didn't pull that out of my ass. I do pull a lot of things out of my ass, don't get me wrong. But on that, it was something
that
I had read.
Which is a whole other health issue.
That's right. Yeah. That's a whole other. But listen to this. And I sent this to you because I want to see if we can get the author on. This was written by Alicia Finley in the Wall Street Journal, but it's about a book that is called In Defense of Sunlight, The Surprising Science of Sun Exposure. Rowan Jacobson is the author. It came out a couple of months ago. And his point is that modern society is starved of sunshine, which is contributing to a rise in chronic disease and mental illness. Now, I got to tell you something. I think there's something to this. I really do. In his telling here, you will find that, you know, you get people that are told to put, you know, sunscreen on, avoid the sun, slather on the sunscreen, even if it's cloudy out. I even had this story from the Washington Post from a couple of weeks ago where they had this doctor that was trying to tell people, you know, your left arm is more susceptible to cancer than your right arm if you're driving on the left side of the, you know, of the street here in this country. But if you're in England, you're on the right side, your arm's hanging out the right side. Just shut up, okay? Shut up. So this will vindicate me here, because what this book says is that too much exposure to ultraviolet light heightens the risk of skin cancer and can cause wrinkles. But skin cancers and other than melanoma are rarely fatal. And the connection between melanoma and sunlight is complicated. So what they say here is that melanomas tend to occur in parts of the body that are less exposed to the sun. Genetics, tanning beds, sunburns in childhood have been found to increase the risk of melanoma, but its association with lifetime sun exposure is weak. Sunlight also triggers protective mechanisms that limit and repair DNA damage. That includes increased production of melanin, which absorbs UV light. So the book goes into great detail here, but they actually did a study in the UK and the Netherlands of more than 10,000 people, Fred, and they found that levels of insulin resistance and metabolic dysfunction were much lower on sunnier days. And there was another one that they did in 2024, and they tracked 89,000 people over 8 years. It found those with the greatest exposure, as measured by wrist light sensors, were 17% less likely to die after adjusting for demographic variables and physical activity. I mean, some of this kind of gets in the weeds, but I've mentioned even the vitamin D, because you've had studies that have shown people with low vitamin D have higher rates of diseases, of diabetes, of heart attack, of stroke, of dementia, depression, all these things. People who live at higher latitudes where sunlight is scarce in winter are more likely to develop asthma, diabetes, autoimmune disorders. So it is complicated. There's a lot of things here, but I do think it's interesting that someone's out there with a book based on something that I've been yapping about over the years, just because I read some research at one point.
So you're a little vindicated.
Well, I want to get the author on because, you know, as with anything with medical research, you know, what I think we do is in this country, we're really good. This is a good week to offer this as an example. We overreact. We wait till something becomes a crisis, right? I use this week as an example because of 9/11. And Fred, we all remember going to meet people, you know, when our mom and dad were flying in or we were going to airport, we could meet people at the airport. We could do things like that. Can't do that anymore because of what happened during 9/11. We overreacted with the TSA. I do think that the, you know, Department of Homeland Security is one of the biggest monstrous federal bureaucracies that was ever created. And it was created because we were so scared of terrorists, justifiably, but we went way all in, and that's what we do, like with the sunscreen thing. Then it becomes, oh, you gotta wear it all the time. You have to wear, like, my daughter is brainwashed by these skincare companies, you know, that everything has to have SPF, etc. No, it doesn't. Get that author on, Fred, for me. That'll be a good thing for you for the health editor desk at Camo X as well. Sue's News with Ethan coming up. Sue's off. We're going to do Sue's News with Ethan. Just a little breaking news here. This makes me very happy, although I think that the end result here is still going to be stupid. LIV Golf has just submitted Chapter 11 bankruptcy. But this also says that they're going to probably reorganize and try to come out of this with different structure and different organization. I wish they would just go away. It would be better for the rest of the golf world if they did, but that's breaking here this afternoon.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Hello, everyone. Did we all have a good Labor Day weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Thought it was spectacular, Ethan.
Good.
I really had a good time. It was a little hot. But I said I went and saw Coyote versus Acme. That was pretty good. Did some cleaning around the house. Found a snake in my house with my kitten yesterday. That was fun.
Ooh.
A little tiny snake. It wasn't that big. Looked like a worm. But
you picked it up. It was that small.
Yeah. Picked it up by the tail.
With your kitten, what
well, the
do you
kitten,
mean
see,
by
what
that?
What happened was I was down. I went downstairs yesterday. The kitten was playing with a snake in my house, like inside, right next to the bunny hutch. And it was alive, and he was just kind of playing with it. So I picked it up, and I put it outside. I saved the snake's life is what I'm trying to tell you, Ethan.
You are a saint.
I know.
Mark
How about
Reardon.
That?
Happy Star Trek Day to all that celebrate.
That would be me.
60 years since the television series pilot, September 8th, 1966, is when it was introduced to American television.
I love it.
I have never watched a single second of Star Trek.
Not even one of the movies?
Mm-mm. Grew up seeing the Star Wars, but was never a huge Star Wars fan. It feels like that's kind of thing, like Star Wars or Star Trek. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a good network on UVerse that shows it every evening from 7 p.m. till midnight. It's like a different generation of each Star Trek.
I was not a fan of the show. It wasn't that I didn't like the show. I just didn't watch it. And then, you know, kind of get into the movies, which were, some of the movies were good, not all of them.
I remember as a kid, it would air during on Saturday afternoons, like on Channel 30. And I'd always fall asleep in it because I found it so boring. But I kind of grew into it.
I don't think we've incentivized Ethan to watch a few episodes.
Yeah, you know, I've been told so far that it's sleep-worthy, and that's about it. But I think, you know, it can't be doing that much worse than some of the new Star Wars stuff that's come out over the last couple of years. It feels like they continue to dig a deeper hole, Disney does, that being said. So this is kind of interesting. we know that we are in a much more modern world when it comes to how we are taking in television entertainment. And now, you know, cable, when streaming first came out, cable was kind of started to become a thing of the past. And I think it still is to a certain extent. But now, streaming prices have jumped more than three times the rate of inflation since 2022.
It's getting ridiculous. Now, I'm to the point now where I'm going to start pulling back. Like, I just got an increase from Peacock last week from $16.99 to $19.99. They're not messing around. They're going right for the $3. Why mess around with $1.50, right? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I use Peacock enough to, you know, to have that service. So I think that one's going to go. But I have most of them, unfortunately. And the prices are not going down, Ethan.
So get this. Apple TV launched for $4.99 a month back in 2019. It has tripled since. Disney Plus launched the same year for $6.99 without ads and is now $11.99 with ads. Netflix Premium is up 125% since 2013. And the cheapest tier of Paramount Plus is up 80% over the last 5 years. It now costs $151 to have all eight major streaming services without ads or bundle commitments. 4 years ago, it was $90. Obviously, unless you want to be lame, going exclusively back to cable isn't really the solution. So I don't know what the answer
The answer is the prices
is.
Are going to keep going up, yeah. Unfortunately.
It's just kind of what you're stuck with at this point, aren't you? Spotify has recently shared Mark's favorite thing, a list, and it includes the top songs of 2026 summer. It's five songs chosen by Spotify's team based on streaming data, cultural impact, and their own, and I quote, editorial expertise. So we will start from five and work our way down. I had never heard of number five, Spend Dat, not that, D-A-T, Dat, by Young with no O, Miami. So just to clarify, Spend Dat, Young Miami. Number four, Day Day by Shakira and Burna Boy. That was the song that you heard probably a lot during the World Cup. The one that went, oh, hey, oh, hey. So that one was pretty popular. Rain Me In is at number three with Sam Fender and Olivia Dean. I like Olivia Dean's voice. I think she has a pretty voice. Number two was probably my number one of the summer, and that was Choosing Texas by Ella Langley. And at number one, Ariana Grande making the list, and this is where we have our music. It's Hate That I Made You Love Me.
Is this that good of a song?
Some of the ones
some of the ones you mentioned I kind of liked. I like the Ella Langley and certainly the Sam Fender. I've known that Sam Fender song for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard this one.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard it either.
It had when I pulled it, the lyric video had like 50 million views, which, I mean, anything Ariana Grande puts out is going to get a lot of attention, but I never
this
even
was
heard
one.
This before. This was number one according to Spotify.
There you go.
Yeah, couldn't believe that. You know, keeping with things that Mark loves, we're going to go back to a list here. And this is a list of things that are highly regarded within America. It is the top brewskis in America. For the past two decades, there has been a craft beer movement where beer drinkers moved away from the classic light lagers for the more intense flavors, IPAs, the Belgian ales, the porters, the stouts, all that stuff. But the question now is the trend reversing? According to a new report, the most popular beer in America is Michelob Ultra, which is arguably the one with the least flavor. Bud Light is at second, followed by Stella Artois, Budweiser, Guinness, Coors Light, Busch Light, you get the picture. It finishes with Miller Lite, Blue Moon, and Corona. The least popular beer is Milwaukee's Best Ice,
oh, come on.
Which I had never even heard
of. That's
good
poverty beer there.
Samuel Adams made the list as well as one of the worst. What else? Keystone Light.
Keystone Light. Like when I was in college, Fred.
I've heard of some of
these. Keystone Light. You could get a case of Keystone Light for like $1.50. I'm telling you, in 1985. It was maybe slightly exaggerating, but that was definitely my poverty beer. Like if you had no money, you get Keystone Light. Is that still out there? I'm impressed that it's still out there.
If you had to guess the state that loves beer the most, Mark, what would you guess?
Texas.
Wisconsin.
It's Wisconsin.
It is not, first of all, dude, if you can't start pronouncing the name of that state correctly.
Wisconsin, that's what I said.
Say it again.
Wisconsin.
That's
what I said.
No, you said
like
Wes.
Whisper, Wisconsin.
You said Wes. Don't say Wes.
I said Wisconsin.
Oh, my
Wisconsin.
God. Fred, did he? No, he didn't.
I heard see? Wisconsin. Yeah.
Missouri is at number 10 on the list. States that are least interested in beer, Alaska, Utah, and Georgia are at the top. That's kind
Georgia?
Of ironic considering
what?
Georgia football
Utah,
team.
They get
a DUI every other
You know what,
week.
Though? It's probably the Southern Baptist thing.
Shocker, but
right?
Budweiser
Where?
Is number one.
In Georgia.
Missouri.
Oh, in Georgia. Yeah,
I mean,
probably.
Utah is the Mormon thing.
Right.
Yeah, that one makes pretty clear sense. Man, I wish I had time to go through some of these on this day in history, but it's a very loaded day of history. I'll do this one because I'm a Cardinals guy. In 1998, Mark McGwire broke Roger Maris's 37-year-old record for home runs, hitting 62. I didn't have the clip, so I'll just like say, there it is, 62. There you guys go. And now to conclude Ethan's news with your random fact. Labor Day is the unofficial end of hot dog season. The National Hot Dog and Sausage Council says that between Memorial Day and Labor Day, Americans eat 7 billion hot dogs. And that's it for Ethan's news.
And I only do Nathan's Famous. I think Fred's right there with me.
Yeah.
We're coming back with Scott Faughn talking about Jeff City. Well, it's not a Monday, but we're still going to visit with Frank Cusimano here in about 13 minutes or so. A lot of sports, not only the Cardinals, obviously, still wrapping up the West Coast road trip, but a lot of college football, controversies, the NFL. We've got a big game in Australia tomorrow night, so Frank's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. We wrapped up last week with a Missouri Supreme Court decision that ends up throwing the state into a bit of a messy situation. Scott Faughn is here, the host of This Week in Missouri. I figure there's no better person to untangle this mess than you, Faughn. So you're tasked with that this afternoon. How are you?
I'm scratching my head with everyone else. I had to have a guy on today just to kind of break down what's happened, not even what it means, just what's actually happened. And it, essentially, Denny Hoskins can be a little controversial, but I mean, you got to keep in mind, people started throwing around words like corrupt and illegal. I take exception to that. Those words have meaning. If you're going to be serious and have a conversation about this, Denny Hoskins was maybe over the top partisan. He pushed every piece of law as far as he could for the Republican Party. And mind you, Mark, Denny Hoskins never really said he was going to be the Secretary of State for everybody. He said, I will be the most partisan Secretary of State there is. He ran on it, was overwhelmingly elected. And now, this is the part I don't understand about liberals. It's like when people run on saying they're pro-life, and then they vote pro-life, you know, the post-dispatch, oh my God, I can't believe it. Well, you should just listen to him. Denny Hoskins has taken every point of law, every possible decision, and been as partisan as possible with those decisions. If you like that, if you don't, that's up to you. None of it's illegal. He slow-walked these petitions. He made every excuse. He went to court and essentially kind of at the end said, I'm going to decide personally this is unconstitutional. It had never been done before that I know of. But still, it is in the law that he could do this, and the Supreme Court checked him.
Well, I mean,
I think it was always going to end somewhere like this.
I mean, they checked, they kicked his ass. I mean, it was unanimous, right? So now we have a situation, and this is the mess on our hands, where we have people that voted, myself included, for members of Congress on these new districts that were drawn by Republicans in 2025. But the Missouri Supreme Court rules unanimously that those districts never legally took effect. So what happens to those of us who voted? I mean, you can't come up with a better definition of disenfranchised voters than this. I don't know what the solution is, but you can't argue that you didn't disenfranchise a lot of voters because you're changing the district from which they're going to vote in now.
I don't. I mean, in Missouri, you can live anywhere and run in any district. Residency is not an issue. I'll be honest with you, Mark. You could boil it down a few different ways. To me, this was always something that was done from Washington, by Washington. None of this was done for a Missourian. This was all done for Washington Republicans. And in this state, when Washington Republicans say jump, the Missouri Republican Party says how high. And they did exactly what they were told. I don't have a lot of ill feelings for them. I think the only reason this isn't just ridiculous and stinks totally is in Democrat states, they do a lot worse than what the Republicans did here.
Well,
so
I think there is
fire with fire.
Yeah. There is something to that. That's
kind of
the only thing that's kept me from really ripping on Denny Hoskins here, because I think you do kind of have to put a lot of the blame on him if you look at the history of this. But then, you know, I wasn't talking about the residency of members of Congress. I'm talking about people in Missouri, Scott, who voted Perhaps they were in Emanuel Cleaver's district originally, and now they are again, but they voted on a different member of the, you know, of the House based on the districts that were put before them according to the new maps. So if that gets, you know, torn up, which it has, and I guess it's being sent to the Supreme Court, I don't think anybody really expects the United States Supreme Court to get involved here. They're going to probably kick it back to Missouri and say, this is your own problem, right?
Well, the country's split up in under nine districts type, where different areas of the country, each judge is the one that you send your appeals to. Guess which judge you send these appeals to from Missouri? A guy named Brett Kavanaugh. Now, how much goodwill do you think he has for partisan Democrats right now?
Yeah, not much.
There are good arguments. Number one, Jackson County submitted an affidavit saying they couldn't do this. They're about like St. Louis when it comes to elections, St. Louis City, that is, and it's just everything's hard. They struggled. They said they couldn't make the changes. Military ballots go out. The ballot by state law is supposed to be finalized today.
Right.
So I think, you know, the Supreme Court has a way of just saying, do what we say, and people do it. And I assume that's what will happen here if they stay this. Lots of folks predict there'll be a stay of this ruling. They'll take the actual case up and hear it later, but it won't matter. I think you're going to know close of business tomorrow if Rick Bratton is running in the district I'm in Jefferson City, or if him and Cleaver both running in inner city Kansas City exclusively. I think the voters have a reason to be put out, but look, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. This whole thing is a Washington boondoggle that the Missouri Republicans were folly enough to get involved with. I get it. I understand. I actually would support an 8-0 map. I think you probably should do it a little more thoughtfully and actually have some Missourians involved in the process of drawing it. But I think you have to fight fire with fire. Then the Republicans have to get tough. Denny Hoskins, say what you will, the dude was partisan tough, just like he promised he would be when he ran. I think the way this ends is up to those judges or justices and how they want to intervene. As of right now, it's going to be 6-2. Cleaver will stay in Congress. What will be more interesting than all of these things, I mean, honestly, I don't think most people care all that much who their member of Congress is or even remember. We had Bob Onder, and everybody thought he was going to be terrible. Bob Onder has been one of the best members of Congress I have ever seen as far as fighting for money for this area, the area he doesn't even live in, by the way. I am as far away from his house as you can be and still be in his district. Bob Onder has been 10-on-10 fighting for earmarks, taking the power out of those liberal bureaucrats, and forcing the United States government to spend money in places they hate and despise and look down on. I am so proud of it. I hate to lose him. But I'll tell you, I think the more interesting part of this that'll matter to more people is there's always been folks picking and pecking at the court fight and wanting to have a big court fight on how you pick these judges. And we had one about 15, 16 years ago. It's probably time for another one. I would say this case, especially if the Supreme Court does not intervene and make it and send Rick Bratton to Congress, I think you're going to see a court fight, and it's about time. I personally like the way we pick judges, but a lot of Republicans don't. It's going to be interesting to see. This will lay wide open the divide in the Republican Party over supporting trial lawyers or not supporting them. This will be a huge litmus test of where you are in the Republican Party if a court fight does come.
Scott Faun is here, the host of This Week in Missouri. You're pretty good at calling balls and strikes. I try to do that as well. But if you go back to the primary and take the congressional maps out of the mix and you look at what happened to the amendments and, you know, the ass-whooping that Republicans got on the amendments, a potential defeat with Amendment 3 coming up. I mean, I know you're a huge fan, as am I, of Governor Kehoe, but you can't really make the case that he's notching a bunch of victories right now, is he?
No, the scoreboard's a scoreboard. I mean, it is what it is. Things he has supported, things he's called special sessions for, things he's pushed for. You know, if he do win the abortion one, then great. If I had to guess, look, if you ask me any question to put before the voters and there's funded opposition on the no side, I'll take the no side.
Right, and that's probably what's going to happen here.
I would say, look, I think they've done a good job with this amendment in making this something palatable that voters that are generally pro-life but not extreme pro-life could vote for. But yes, anytime you're wanting a yes and the no people have money, 100%, I always will take the no side to start off with an advantage. They do here also. Yeah, it is going to be. Look, but they need a win.
But where does that put Republicans? Okay, like entering the next legislative session with Mike Kehoe. You know, like you said, they need a win. There's not a lot of those coming right now. They have a super majority, and you're not getting wins. That seems mind-bogglingly frustrating.
Well, you could pass anything through that legislature right now. It's just that some of these bigger things the voters have to weigh in on. And when the voters weigh in on them, they don't weigh in on their side. I'll tell you what I think this is, Mark. They've had the majority for 25 years. It's a generation, 24 now. A generation of that, and they're all pretty ideologically aligned. The trial attorney stuff has been the biggest change in all of that. But I'm just going to tell you, I think they're out of a lot of the things you do. They've cut taxes to the point where the state's having trouble meeting its obligations. And so how far do you go with that? They did abortion, but they banned abortion to the extent that a lot of folks just wouldn't comfort with it. I think this is the problem of being in the majority this long. The cupboard is getting a little bare of good practical ideas that help Missourians. So you get into this like radically partisan stuff. Everybody wants to pass a bill. Everybody wants to have their name on history. You kind of done the main Republican things, and just running government well is kind of boring. You
know? I always tell this story when I was first doing reporting, when I was learning how to be a reporter at journalism school in Columbia, and you may or may not know this, but I stayed there after I graduated for 10 years as well. But there was a guy, I think his name was Maxwell, Jim Maxwell or something like that. He represented what is right south of Columbia? Is it Ashton? One of those little
Ashland,
communities.
Yep.
Ashland. Okay. Ashland. So anyway, I'm covering this guy. He's a state lawmaker, and he kind of prides himself on the fact he was a Democrat. Okay, but this is back when there were Blue Dog Democrats, like conservative Democrats. But he sort of prided himself on the fact that he never introduced a piece of legislation. And the young, naive person in me was like, wait a second, what are you talking about? Like, why would you have that job if you're not going to introduce? No. He was actually thinking along the right way. We have way too many pieces of legislation. We have way too many laws.
I agree
and all
with
this
that.
Stuff. Right. So this guy, and he was a Democrat way ahead of his time. I wish we can get Republicans on that board right now. All right, Scott Faughn, keep an eye on him. We'll see what happens here with all this situation with the court. I mean, we're going to have to hear something from Brett Kavanaugh here in the next couple of days, aren't we?
I, from what I hear, the rumblings I've heard is you're going to hear something from them, even if it's they're not going to take it up.
Right.
Probably by this time tomorrow, we're going to have an idea of how this lands. And then we talk about how that impacts going forward. Watch this port plan. It could be a real opening civil war in the Republican Party in Missouri.
All right, Scott Faughn, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. You have a great week.
You bet. You too.
All right. Cusumano coming up next. Well, it's a Tuesday afternoon, but we were off yesterday. Frank Cusumano from KSDK is here. Frank, I literally don't even know where to start. There's so much sports news in the last 5 days. Dealer's choice. You pick.
I think we could start with the Cardinals and what happened the other night in Colorado with umpire Doug Eddings, who decided to play God and basically said, this is my field. Straighten your hat out. To Rincon, the major league pitcher for the Cardinals, making his debut as a big leaguer, I should say. It was just crazy. I mean, when does an umpire ever say, this is my field, this is my stadium? I believe it belongs to the Rockies. And I tell you what, though, it kind of bonded the Cardinals because
it did.
You know, they wore their hats crooked the next day. And you know the really bad thing about this umpire, Doug Eddings, is he lied about it, and he said the Rockies player said, is he allowed to wear his hat like that? No, they didn't say that. He made that up. So really a guy that's got some major issues.
And then he misses a big play at home plate, right? And the Cardinals didn't have a challenge.
Yeah, not to mention that. And the fact that he's kind of been kind of a horse's A most of his career. So really just kind of a bad moment for baseball.
But a couple of games here in San Francisco, and then I cannot believe it, but we got the last homestand of the year coming up this weekend.
Yeah, and what a weekend it's going to be with Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina going into the Cardinal Hall of Fame. You know, Mark, I can remember I'm on that Red Ribbon Committee that kind of puts the ballot together, and they've always had the Hall of Fame ceremony at Ballpark Village. And I don't know who brought it up. It wasn't me, but somebody said, do you really think Ballpark Village can hold Yachty and Albert?
Good
and
point.
And then Bill DeWitt's in the meeting, you know, you're right. Yeah, let's move it to the stadium, and that's what's going to happen.
That is very wise. We have to talk about the University of Michigan and Western Michigan and that controversy because holy cow. Is there anyone that really thinks that Michigan legit won that game outside of Michigan alums?
It's a good way to put it. No, I don't think so. I heard really a great analysis by Mike Pereira, who's like the NFL guy and the college guy when it comes to officiating. And he said, if there's ever a discrepancy with the clock, and there was obviously, but like the control clock, the Big Ten clock was a tenth of a second off. But he says, if there's ever a discrepancy, the theory is you always go with the clock that the one is being watched by 15 million people.
Yeah, right. Game. And not three people in a replay room, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So it's ugly, it's terrible, but man, not a good weekend for officiating and umpires.
No kidding, it was not. In this upcoming week, we got Mizzou and KU, always a fun rivalry game. The second year that rivalry
I'm nervous
has
about it.
Returned.
I will be honest with you.
And Mark, you have mentioned that you are a little bit concerned. I believe, what is it, 6-point favorite right now are? Right around there. So I'm curious of your thoughts on the upcoming rivalry game and what do the Tigers need to do, Frank, to pull out a win and jump to 2-0?
Well, I just edited an interview with Eli Drinkwitz, and I thought one of the things he said, look, I know everybody wants to talk about the rivalry. It's been around, I guess, since 1891 and, you know, all of the great games in the past. But the thing is, we don't really care about that. He goes, I just want to make sure we are executing and we handle a road game. And I think the good news is Caden Green, their All-American candidate at left tackle, it looks like he's going to be back. And look, the only thing disappointing from that first game against Arkansas Pine Bluff was the running in the game. You get back at All-American tackle, and Jamal Roberts, keep in mind, had 143 yards against the Jayhawks last year. I think it's going to look like a different team with Caden Green out there.
I hope so. It's just, you know, early road game, rivalry, you just get a little nervous in that line. Like Ethan said, last time I saw it was 6.5. Maybe it's moved since then, but that's rather tight for a Mizzou fan going on the road, I think.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, Mark, you almost have to win this game. You almost have
to
5-0.
Yeah. It's a must.
You really do. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, Frank, have a great week. We'll probably get you on right before that game on Friday and get a preview then. Final thoughts.
Sounds great.
All right,
thanks,
take care. That's Frank Cusimano, sports director, KSDK. Look, anything, weird things happen in college football. Just ask Michigan. You know, there were a couple of these games over the weekend that were a little tighter. I think that people expected what happens.
Yeah, Oregon-Boise State, touchdown finish. That one was a crazy one. Even last night, all the chaos.
SMU game?
SMU Florida and Florida State.
SMU ended up pulling away in that game, though, right?
No, they won close.
Oh,
it was
close?
A close finish, okay, yeah. And you brought up something that was just a beautiful realization, Mark, is now... And Sue would roll her eyes if she heard this. But starting tomorrow,
fantasy football,
we have football for 5 straight days.
Yep, we start in Australia, right?
We start in Australia, Rams and Niners, and Aaron Donald not traveling for that game on behalf of the Rams, came out of retirement to play this season for Los Angeles. So that will be an interesting storyline to keep up with. But, man, couldn't think of a better matchup to start off the
season.
All
right. Of course, this is a very important week because it is the 25th anniversary of 9/11. Paul Morrow, who is a regular contributor to this show, he's a Fox News contributor. He writes at theopsdesk.org. He was an officer at that time, and he stood guard at Ground Zero. He's got some amazing memories coming up. We'll also talk to Paul about the latest in the Lindsey Clancy case. He covered that extensively. And it's Tech Talk Tuesday. George Rosenthal, right around 5:30.
Get more at 971talk.com.